It's 91.7 KALW San Francisco.
Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Right on KALW 91.7 in the Bay Area. I'm Dean Johnson, in tonight for my good buddy Jeff Hayden. In the last roughly 3 weeks, we have all been witnesses to history. On June 28th, in case you've forgotten, the President of the United States performed so badly in a debate that many questioned his fitness for office. On July 13th, there was an assassination attempt against the once and possibly future President of the United States, Donald Trump. 2 days later, a felony case against Trump was dismissed. The next day, the Republican convention began. The optics were great. The president of the Teamsters Union spoke. Hulk Hogan tore his T-shirt. And some of the media self-centered the critics and the pundits that they had previously sponsored. On July 21st, Joe Biden withdrew from the presidential race, ending a 50-year career in public service and endorsing his vice president, former California Senator Kamala Harris, as the Democratic candidate for president of the United States. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, it feels like we're living in some sort of science fiction novel. We're at the crossroads of at least three alternate futures. If Donald Trump wins, he's said he's going to become a dictator from day one. If he loses, his followers have said ominously that January 6th was just practice and that 2024 will be America's last election. Or if the Democratic candidate wins, we could, as a Republican white paper once predicted, see the demise of the Republican Party and a rapid slide into Democratic socialism. So tonight we ask, what just happened? How did we get here? What's next? And most importantly, what are you going to do about it? You have got to get in on this conversation. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134 if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. Or if you're outside of the Bay Area, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Please remember that our guests are here to educate and inform. We cannot give you legal advice, and they cannot give you any sort of advice. And the opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily the opinions of KALW, National Public Radio, the Bar Association, or any of their employees. Now, tonight, we have a sensational panel to discuss these historic issues. And I'm so excited to have these gentlemen as guests. Bob Marks is a former political consultant who has worked with both Republican and Democratic candidates and elected officials. John Flaherty is a former chief of staff to Norm Mineta when he was Secretary of Transportation and to Representative Anna Eshoo, and he has worked as a political operative in Washington for many years. Brent Turner is a graduate of Lincoln Law School in San Francisco, and he has a degree granted by the University of San Diego in International Legal Studies from Oxford. Mr. Turner is a community activist whose efforts have included volunteer work for the homeless children's health and education, civil rights, and environmental issues. And last, but by no means least, Mark Simon is a political writer who is considered a bellwether of political analysis and opinion for the peninsula and the Bay Area. He currently writes for the San Mateo Daily Journal. Gentlemen, good evening.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey. All right. Tonight, as our audience knows, when I'm hosting or co-hosting, I always like to start with a big question and get everybody to weigh in on this. And here's tonight's question. You know, the presidential election is a contest for the most powerful office on earth. One would think that it would be a competition between the best of the best, between somebody with one set of ideas and somebody with a different and contrasting vision. Now, right now, we have one candidate who has 34 felony convictions, 4 bankruptcies, civil judgments for fraud and sexual harassment, and who was arguably complicit in a violent attempt to overthrow the last election. And according to most of the polls, he's winning. How did we get there? Gentlemen, I leave it to you. Who would like to start?
Well, I guess I'll start.
Go ahead, Mark.
First of all, who's to say that it's not the best of the best? This may be the best we can do. I mean, if you think about the environment in which political figures have been rising in the last 10 years, we're all old enough to remember when there were 3 TV stations, 3 networks, and they dominated the news and everybody got the same information and operated with the same understanding by and large. Now it's greatly fractured. Somebody has to weave their way through a multifaceted environment where competing for people's attention is more complicated than ever. It doesn't speak well for a deliberative process. The other note I'd add, I suppose, is historically, you know, not all of them are good. Not all of the candidates are the best of the best. Not all of our presidents have been good ones. Usually the really good ones tend to stand out in the crowd. I do take some solace in the historic trend that we tend to have people rise to the occasion when it's really bad enough that we need them to. But I am reminded of a quote from Thomas Jefferson, the government you elect is the government you deserve.
Yeah, you know, and that also leads me to wonder. I remember another quote, and I think it's from Winston Churchill, and he asked, does history make the man or does the man make history? And it seems like throughout our history, we've had presidents who sort of rose to the occasion. We had Abraham Lincoln in the Civil War, Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the war against fascism and the Great Depression. And I wonder, the candidates that we're running now, would they have the capability of rising to the occasion if faced with that kind of crisis? What do you think?
Well, it's difficult, and you brought up Abraham Lincoln. The country was clearly divided back when he became president, and we're as divided as we've ever been right now. So, you know, I'm not sure who can rise to the occasion. I think we have an interesting situation here. We have a Democratic candidate that's largely unknown, other than kind of surface impressions and so forth. She has that opportunity to rise to the occasion. She has the opportunity to really create a vision that people grab onto. Whether she can do that remains to be seen.
Yeah, that's the question. I'd like, you know, I'd kind of like to hear from everybody on this. So Harris, you know, is, you know, almost certainly the Democratic nominee. I remember polls for months have been that there have been polls that tested whether people preferred Trump, Biden, or somebody else. And somebody else was winning. I mean, it was real clear that a lot of people, especially undecided voters, were really unhappy with their choices. Is Kamala that somebody else? What do you think?
Well, I mean, we look back at the 50s in the McCarthy era and say, how could anybody do that kind of thing? And what drove people to be so crazy? I think the next generation, the generation after, is going to look back at us and say, what were they thinking during this time with this gun? And it remains to be seen whether Vice President Harris is, you know, the JFK type or the others who Lincoln was mentioned that come out and bring the country out of a period of real fear and real anger.
Yeah, you wonder, you know, you talk about JFK, and Mark mentioned the time when there were just 3 networks. I remember that time, aging myself, and I remember the Kennedy-Nixon debates. And I remember listening to Jack Kennedy in particular on the Tonight Show with Jack Parr, who, for those of you who don't know, was the predecessor of Johnny Carson. And you'd ask him a question, and he would talk in sentences and paragraphs. And you could ask him about the most esoteric, you know, issue of international relations. And he would answer, and you'd say, that's a guy who probably could be president and could be a good president. And truth to be told, people said the same thing about Richard Nixon. Where are those people today? Have they gone to do startups, or, you know, what's happening to where are our JFKs, our Robert Kennedys, our Richard Nixons, our Ronald Reagans?
You know, we've been through decades now of people trying to manage candidates, get them to focus on sound bites. It's certainly true today. So it's a really a different world. And those kinds of orators that we'd like to see, I'm not sure how well they would fare today, given the electorate that's out there, given the divisions that are out there.
Yeah, you wonder if somebody like as Jack Kennedy did, got up and said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." I think a large proportion of the voters today would say, "You know, that's crazy. I want to know what you're going to do for me." Am I right about that or wrong?
No, absolutely right.
Yeah, and why have we changed? Have we lost the ability to mobilize ourselves as a nation, or lost that feeling that in some sense we as a nation are one and we can get together and do something like, oh, say, put a man on the moon or pass the Civil Rights Bill or, you know, whatever the monumental project is?
Yeah. When Reagan and Tip O'Neill were really leading things politically, they got along great after the politics of the day. Right now, that's not possible because senators, members of Congress, they hate each other. It's a completely different environment, and there isn't that collegiality that you really need to make good laws and good policy.
Yeah, Bob makes a great point. It started to shift, I think, when Newt Gingrich came in, not to key on him, but there was a shift where it was no longer, people were no longer taking satisfaction in winning an issue. They were driven to make the other person lose. And that sort of took hold in Congress, and it hasn't really shifted.
There's only...
Oh, shoot. Well, everybody has frozen up on us. John, you're unfrozen. Talk. You were saying
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, Clinton was doing a town hall, and I recall one of the questions somebody was asking the president of the United States is, does he prefer boxers or briefs? And I thought, well, you know, that's a weighty question. So some of it is just the sensationalism of the era we're in, and the craving for attention. And it's no surprise that our politicians cater to that. And, you know, I can recall during Obama's terms, incoming freshman Republicans would not have their picture taken with Obama. And, you know, that used to be standard operating procedure. There was an honor being in the Oval Office that people now find politically treacherous.
You know, that raises a question that I've pondered a couple of times. Have we lost the separation between celebrity and politics, between celebrities and heroes? One of the things that struck me over the weekend, or actually last week, George Clooney weighed in on whether Biden should withdraw or not. And of course, this was big news because George Clooney is a movie star. I mean, who cares? He's a great actor, but he's not a political expert, but his word carries weight. Donald Trump was a more or less TV star. Matthew McConaughey talking about running for public office in Texas. Is that part of the problem, that we've just lost that division? We've lost that professionalism. We've lost that career and drive, and we just, you know, pick the most handsome face now.
Yeah. People said the same thing about Ronald Reagan. But, you know, the Trump ability, he's really an entertainer. He's, I think, brilliant at marketing. And, you know, he understands the time that we're in. Should that make somebody a president? No, but it's what works in today's politics.
Yeah,
We haven't heard from Brent.
Yeah,
Brent.
Well, I'm in agreement with most of the conversation. I think we're leaving a couple parts out, but certainly that melding of TMZ and CNN and the show business effect to the environment is disturbing. I think the whole arena has been taken to the low, obviously, and Trump seized that moment that was in existence at the time he came to power. If we are in agreement that he legitimately came to power, which is another issue surrounding the 2016 election. So we're leaving out the Putin effect, the social media piece of it, which I think is to blame. And the kids today, you know, they think in sound bites, so you have to cater to that. But I think we're going to hit a new stride here.
Well, I think we lost Brent there for a moment, but let's go to a call. We have Dan from Danville. Dan, are you there with us?
Thank you for taking the call. I always find it interesting when people throw out the term election denier, when people question 2020 and the irregularities there, but then on the other side of their mouth, they're talking about 2016 being questionable. If they had no hypocrisy, they'd have absolutely nothing. We were never meant to have career politicians. The founding fathers did not want people to be in public office for life. So, yeah, they can act more professional, certainly, but that doesn't mean that it's a requirement for somebody to serve in Congress for 30 years to have that statesman's mentality or eloquence. I don't think that's a requirement at all. And I really hope, last point, that Kamala Harris's record as district attorney and attorney general is made known outside of California, since she thumbed her nose at the Constitution and at judges with regards to prisoners and keeping them beyond their sentence and ignoring Supreme Court rulings about releasing nonviolent offenders. It's abhorrent, it's tyrannical, and that's not a person that I really want to see in the big seat. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for calling, Dan. You know, I think Dan raises an important point, is gerontocracy our problem? Is one of the reasons that we're so paralyzed is that the baby boomer generation is just desperate to hang on for power?
Well, yeah.
It's certainly one of the problems. I mean, it's the problem with the situation with the president, and we found out tonight as he addressed the nation that that was a problem. And if you look at the average age of senators and House members, it is a problem.
Yeah, I mean, you look back at Mitch McConnell is stopping in the middle of a speech and losing his whole train of thought. And I think there probably are, you know, a number of actors there who are in the same boat. So is the answer term limits or just vote this generation out and vote the next generation in?
Yeah, I think people have different ideas about that. But I think what we're talking about is, we've lost faith in our institutions, in the pillars, whether it's the presidency, the Congress, the media. Now a big part of Trump's campaign is the weaponization of the justice system. So people just don't have anywhere to look to. Everybody can find their own truth. And so we're really I think, really drifting into a world that I think those of us who've been around for a while are not going to be very comfortable.
You know, I'm sorry, I had to reset the Zoom feed here, but I've been observing in local elections, there's a real desire for the people who have been in charge for a while to get out of the way. You really saw that with Dianne Feinstein. And it's amazing because there's no more common sense, no nonsense person I've ever known than Dianne Feinstein. And yet she hung on well past her effect. Use-by date, so to speak. And so I think there's absolutely, I mean, if you look past Biden and look at the list of people who could be running for president right now, it's long, they're young, they're interesting, they're dynamic. What we're seeing, I think, demographically is the country is changing. And in many ways, it's the end of the post-World War II, not quite baby boomer, but post-World War II generation dominating our politics. And that means, you know, white guys, you know, they're going to be more minorities. Certainly California is leading the way. We see that, as I mentioned, in local elections here. There are people who had every technical and theoretical and historical advantage losing elections because they were middle-aged white guys and not somebody new and fresh. So I think there's no question there's a hunger for something new and fresh. I think there's a hunger for a vision. You know, I've been reading Doris Kearns Goodwin's book about the 1960s and her husband, Dick Goodwin, who was remarkably in the middle of so many key moments for JFK and LBJ and for Bobby Kennedy. And they all, what really struck me is they all brought this exciting vision for what could be. And calling people to service, calling people to be participants. I think that's a winning message for Kamala Harris because it's such a contrast to Trump's American carnage. But it has to be focused on what Nancy Pelosi calls the kitchen table issues.
Yeah,
go ahead, Dean. Sorry.
Isn't there a real tension there though? Because somebody like Jack Kennedy would say, we choose to do the hard things because they're hard. I have a feeling that the American electorate doesn't want to do those hard things anymore. They don't want to hear about those hard things. They want to hear about, you know, the price of milk, you know, the price of gasoline. And it's pretty obvious to me that right now the Republican Party is hitting those issues. I agree. I mean, we need a vision, but as yet, I don't see anybody articulating a coherent vision the way a Kennedy or on the other side of the spectrum, a Reagan might have done.
I think people are fed up with watching program politicians. You can almost predict what they're going to say, and they're very good at saying nothing. And I think in a strange way, one of the appeals of Donald Trump is when he riffs and he wanders around and he says, is they look at him and say, ah, finally somebody who's not programmed. As strange as that may seem, I think that's a big part of his appeal.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
This is Brent Turner again. I think we've turned the corner. I think this conversation is almost a couple days late. Because of the events of the last few days, I believe that we've turned a corner, that the country is now set on better days ahead. I do think that the older white guys have a place still teaching the kids, if for whatever it's meant to enlighten them regarding Nazi Germany, World War II, our history. So these people, and I said old white guys, but I meant the standard bearers from the past, Dianne Feinstein included, these people have great institutional knowledge. They're not to be dismissed. That learning, the teaching ability to the youth is important, but at a certain point, I agree with the panel, it's a good idea to get out of the way of the youth and let them create their own future, which I think they're disturbed by environmental issues And I think they're tired of Trump's venom at this point.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't it be fairly easy to just articulate in a few sound bites a vision and say, look, we have the greatest economy in the world. We are 5% of the world's population. We have 25% of the world's wealth. We have the wherewithal to do anything we want. If we want universal health care, universal education, the greatest, you know, the defense network in the world, if we want to clean up the environment, it's there to do it. You know, we can print the money to do it. And the only real constraint on doing that is inflation. Which up until COVID was on a holiday for 20 years. I mean, it would not be that hard to articulate that vision, but nobody's doing it. And it just seems to me that the great secret here is that our politicians are massive underachievers, and the Jack Kennedys and the Ronald Reagans of the world, it kind of inspired us to be overachievers. And that's what nobody is doing. And that's my rant. I'd love to hear the other side of that.
John, you were going to say something.
Well, I don't want to look past the presidency of Barack Obama. I think that, you know, first African-American president, no scandals to speak of, which is unusual in 8 years of presidency, passed the massive health care bill. I think history is going to judge him better than we have in terms of accomplishments. And I agree with Dean. I don't think he challenged us at times, but I think he challenged his fellow public policy folks. And I think he was relatively successful.
Yeah, and he's really the last president. He got 53% of the vote the first time he ran. I don't know when we're going to see that again.
Right.
But that's a good example. You know, the kind of thing we're talking about has to be someone who understands what people are thinking, how they're feeling. And we've had presidents who were good at that. Reagan was good at capturing that sensibility people had of what they wanted America to be like and what they saw in America. Obama was good. Clinton was good. When Clinton said, "I feel your pain," I think people believed him, you know, that he understood what it was like to be on the outs because he'd grown up that way. And that's part of what we don't see yet. A guy like J.D. Vance had the chance to be that guy, but he took a weird turn, it seems to me.
Absolutely.
Trump, you know, the struggles Trump have had largely been self-inflicted. So we'll see. I mean, Biden waited a long time to get this job, and it's a shame that it had to end this way, but that's what happened.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation in a few seconds, but first, a break for our station.
You're listening to 91.7 KALW in San Francisco. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. Now we continue with Your Legal Rights with guest host tonight, Dean Johnson.
All right, and I'd like to change the direction of the conversation here a little bit. We've talked about that future, and I don't know about anybody else, but I sometimes wake up in the middle of the night wondering what that future is going to be like if Donald Trump wins or if Kamala Harris wins. I mean, we kind of have the picture of what's coming with Donald Trump. I mean, he's now got legal immunity for official acts. He is, in Justice Sotomayor's terms, a king, somebody above the law. He already owns the Supreme Court. He has a majority in the House, which may be larger if he gets elected and brings people on his coattails. He may also have a majority in the Senate for the same reason. When he got in 2016, he was really kind of surprised that he even got in, and he had no agenda. Now he's got a 900-page playbook called Project 2025. SCOTUS has given him the grounds for essentially decimating the administrative state, in their cases, Relentless and Loper, it looks like we're being set up for something that is very new and very different from what we're used to as citizens of a democracy. On the other hand, Kamala Harris, as we've been talking about, her vision is kind of undefined. So I'll leave it open to you. What's the future under Kamala Harris? What's the future under Donald Trump? And are you worried either way?
First of all, I'm always worried. Mike can tell you that.
Very healthy of you, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, here's the problem for Kamala Harris. Kamala was able to do what he did. He had 2 years really, you know, focused on running for office. We now, you know, are expecting Kamala Harris to do all these wonderful things. She's got 100 days to do it. It's a really difficult task. And beyond that, we're going to see $100 million worth of TV advertising defining her. The Trump campaign will want to do that before she's able to define herself. You talk about Project 2025. We're going to hear a lot about the Green New Deal, which Kamala Harris sponsored. And while people, you know, in California may think, you know, that's a great.
I think Bob froze up. John, you want to give us a different perspective?
Yeah, I would say if you look at the 2025, there are two things that are, I think, just plain dangerous and sort of go into the same pile as the same basket as the January 6th. The first is immigration. There are 11 million people that are undocumented folks in this country, and he is making no bones about bringing in the National Guard, authorizing local law enforcement to do detainment and deportation. Now, there's some question as to whether or not it's just financially possible to do that. But what is not is what it does to the fabric of our communities and what it does to the civic fabric. These denials of stops sort of using it for other things. So I think the immigration issue is a huge issue. I think the women's issues that are confronting the country take a back seat as he tries to move this state-by-state view on choice. And then finally, and perhaps the most dangerous, is the foreign affairs issues. I think his tendency to cozy up to right-wing dictators portend real problems for the U.S. The U.S. position in the world and for the world generally.
Yeah,
Bob, you kind of got cut off there by the computer.
I don't disagree with you, John. You know, it's important to point out that Trump has pretty much disavowed Project 2025. You can say, well, 150 people who worked for him were part of creating that. What I'm looking at, though, is from a voter's perspective. They hear Project 2025. They hear the Green New Deal. People talk about all of that. And in their mind, it's a wash. Now, if you're already voting Democrat or for Harris, you know, you're appalled by it. If you're on the other side and you're living in those Rust Belt states where communities have been decimated, factories have been lost, people don't have jobs, they don't have educational retraining and all of that, you're going to have a little different view. It's like Dean was saying earlier, we're in a society where it's all about me. What's it going to be about me? How am I going to move forward? You know? So while I share your concerns about 2025, and I think it's nuts, I just think that the voters are lost when you get into those discussions.
Well, and let me just add, I can confirm Bob does worry about everything. I'm thinking, if it's 900 pages, what are the chances that Donald Trump's ever going to read it or even have it read to him? I'm sure, I suspect he has not read yet The Art of the Deal. There is, and Bob and John have worked more in government than I ever have. So Brett also has insights on this. It's a lot harder to just get what you want in government than people think it is. And I can easily imagine a lot of this stuff, I mean, not going anywhere. Now, the cautionary note is Obama began doing things by executive order, and then Trump began doing things by executive order, and it makes me very nervous that they keep doing that. The immunity ruling by the Supreme Court is a good example. To me, what that really meant was the Senate's the place where you're supposed to decide if somebody's behaved improperly. And so then what it really says is the Senate should do its job. That's iffy. But I'm not as pessimistic as certainly as Bob would be, that this is going to be a sweeping win for Trump that's going to sweep in both the House and the Senate. You know, historically, when you lose an election, which Trump has now done in 2018, 2020, and 2022, the party goes through the agonizing reappraisal of their message and, gee, we need to think about how to make the tent bigger. They never doubled down on the message that they were losing with. The Republicans have doubled and tripled down on the same message. And I have a feeling voters figure this stuff out. I could easily imagine voters splitting their vote, voting to put Trump in the White House if they really have to, but electing a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House.
Yeah. Just quickly to follow up, I don't believe that Trump is just going to skate to the White House. I'm not convinced of that at all. I think that there's an opportunity where there wasn't one a week ago for the Democrats and for Vice President Harris to win. I'm just, you know, not sure how that's going to play out. I don't think anybody knows. I think both campaigns are trying to figure out, do we really? So I think, you know, we're going to have to wait and see how that, as Mark would say, only time will tell.
Yeah, that's what we always used to say when we were closing our pieces on TV. You know, there's a 50-50 chance that this could go either way, but only time will tell.
Yeah.
Back to you. It seems to me, I watched the Republican convention just to see how the optics played out. And I got to say, they were pretty good. But I think the only significant moment in that convention was when the president of the Teamsters took the podium and spoke to the Republican Party. And I'm wondering how you feel. I think the key to this election is going to be who speaks to the working class and who brings those working class voters in. Anybody, what do you think about that? Who's going to do that? And is that the key to the election?
Well, I see that as just political hedging. I mean, if I was advising the head of the Teamsters, I'd tell him, I don't know if I'd want him to go on the convention and speak there, but I would tell him, you know, you really do have to hedge your bets because you don't know who's going to win. There's a certain political logic to that, even if it seems callow. So it goes. Not to be too cynical about it.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that the president of the Teamsters got up and started talking, and Trump was up applauding with all his buddies. And as he started talking, as the president of the Teamsters started talking about expanding unions and the right to collective bargaining, Trump is kind of looking at his colleagues going, should we really have this guy on the stage? And one of the commentators said, are we watching the Republican convention or the Democratic convention? Let's go to a caller. We've got Emiliana on line one from Cupertino.
Hi.
Hi.
So I noticed it's all guys and no girls, no women to speak of.
Yeah, unfortunate. We got the people that were available for tonight and wanted to talk.
Emiliana, this is Brent Turner. I'll give you the floor for the women, and we are short on women. Go ahead and make your point, because we'd love to hear it, and women are going to take the power here coming up, so the floor is yours.
I think that
Kamala is way underestimated here. She didn't just show up on the scene. She earned her keep. She started from the ground and built herself up from the ground up. She's run 2 statewide elections. She was the former district attorney in San Francisco. She has worked side by side with Joe Biden. She knows what's happening. She understands. Everything already is in place. Now she just has to throw down her brand of politicking, and it's going to work. And I'm gonna cast some vision here. She's not gonna just win. She will win by a massive landslide. She will make Joe Biden's win look trivial compared to what's coming, just because she's a woman. And all those social issues that are happening right now, especially abortion, especially blue collar issues, she is uniquely qualified to speak to all of that. Because she understands what it's like not to be underestimated and to be counted out. And so I really feel like the tenor so far that I've heard is that she's being counted out. That yes, she has an uphill battle, but she is more than capable, because I tell you, as a woman of color, which I am, she is more than equipped to beat Trump handily. And just like Michelle Obama said, there will be the number of voters that are going to show up. We're going to vote in numbers that cannot be ignored.
That's right. That's right. Thank you for that. I just wanted to chime in on that note and say I'm in agreement with you. I think we're normalizing Trump, which is unfortunate, because history will dictate in retrospect that the people that stood with him and normalized him now will be frowned upon in by history, I believe. And I think you are right. The caller is correct that the women are coming to take power, and this will be a great day for America.
Hey, Emiliana, are you still there?
America had a woman president. We are so behind the eight ball versus, for example, Europe. It's time for a woman to be the lead, because a woman always brings something to the table that men cannot bring. So really, America has only had half of its capability represented in the Oval Office.
Emiliana, you're rocking. So here, join the panel here for a moment. You are sitting next to Kamala Harris, and she says, what's the message that's going to bring the voters out to vote for me? What do you tell her? What should she be saying to the American voter?
That change has come, and she's going to continue to carry the torch of change, but it's going to come exponentially now. You're not going to be able to miss it, no matter who you are, no matter where you're from. No matter what's about to take place will touch you and generations to come. And the question is, do you want it to be for good or not so good?
I like it.
Hear, hear.
I think there's another element, and I think Emiliana is onto something, but I think there has to be a recognition of why people are for Trump. That there are, I mean, some of them are the same people who voted for Obama, which is kind of mind-blowing in and of itself. But there has to be a recognition that Trump is speaking to people's frustrations, to people feeling economically dislocated and socially disenfranchised. So there has to be an acknowledgement. A lot, you know, Bob mentioned the Rust Belt. I mean, how many different people have had to go through how many different job retrainings because the industry they were in simply disappeared? One of the questions you prepped us for, Dean, was about the middle class. And that's really about labor unions and working class people doing that kind of work. I mean, the labor unions basically created the middle class with better wages, better working conditions, and better benefits. But the jobs that they depended upon, many of them are just gone. And so there's the challenge, I think, to say, you know, I'd love to hear somebody say, we're going to bring those jobs back. And yeah, they're going to pay a little more for them, but that's because we're America. We'll find a way to make this work.
Yeah. And, you know, just my two cents, the only way to bring them back is to rebuild the Rust Belt, rebuild those factories with modern technology so that we can make goods that, A, are relevant to the 20th century, and B, yes,
are, you know, are marketable compared to foreign produced goods. And that's a massive undertaking, but that's something that a president who cared would do and would make a priority. Emiliana, I think you've got a picture.
What?
Go ahead, Emiliana.
Thank you.
You've definitely got a future.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is that the promise of America has never talked about life after high school, high school diploma. People act, and I, full disclosure, I had this attitude for a minute, but okay, I got my bachelor's degree, I'm done. No, I'm not. I'm not done. I will always be learning and learning and learning and learning. Retraining, retooling, reusing some of my experience to something going forward. So there has to be a mindset change.
Absolutely.
Absolutely right. And there has to be the resources there for people to continue that learning process. Otherwise, our workforce is not relevant to the 21st century.
Yep.
Well, I got a full disclosure and a certain amount of pride. I should disclose that Emiliana was a student of mine at San Jose State when I taught journalism. That explains why she's so spoken.
Aha!
I'm just a little passionate, and I was a poli sci minor, so yeah.
Well, you obviously learned from the best.
Yes, I did.
So what, you know, this raises the big question. I mean, which party is making the pitch that's going to bring the American voter out? I have to say, it seems to me that the Republicans are talking about the gas pump and the price of milk, and Democrats are talking about high-level issues that may not affect the day-to-day. Who's more effective?
Yeah, I guess a lot of it depends on how well does Trump stay on message. Whatever that is. I mean, one of the problems is he's been so geared up to run against Biden that I think I wonder if he's going to have trouble not running against Biden, that it's just going to distract him all the time, which could be a problem for him because he's not running against Biden. So we'll see what happens there. To simply label her as another Biden, I don't know what kind of legs that sort of argument has.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to label her as another Biden. I think that, you know, Trump's co-campaign manager, Chris Lasavitas, was the guy who put together the Swift Boat campaign against John Kerry. You know, this is going to be a hard knuckle, ugly fight. And, you know, on both sides. So, you know, it's hard to predict what's going to happen. It's one of those elections where it's going to play out in front of us. And all we can do is really, you know, I mean, if people want to get involved and they want to defeat Trump, they should go to those Rust Belt states and volunteer for the campaigns. They should go to Arizona, Nevada, or Georgia and volunteer. It's going to be a battle, and it's probably going to be a very close election again.
Yeah, there's a real question. I mean, does Trump campaign on issues or does he campaign on emotions like resentment and anger?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole.
He goes to resentment and anger every time.
Yeah, take our country back. That implies that there's a group of people who are voting for Trump who used to own the country, but they don't because it got taken away from them, and now they have to take it back by any means necessary.
Yeah. Trump's view of the world, and I think John said this earlier, is I can't be a winner unless you're a loser. And, you know, if you look back at his history, he'll have people that he's great friends with. Then he'll have a falling out. Then they'll come back together. Then they'll have another falling out. I mean, he's a different kind of cat. He's, you know, it's not where most of us are. But he's going to do it his way, one way or the other.
And that's a good point, Bob. If the vice president can define herself as looking forward and not being involved in these things and bringing a message, sort of that same, the image of her walking down that from that airplane much faster than either the president or Trump, and to the children, I think that I think she's going to have a very good chance to prevail. I think Trump is can't help but be negative. That's why he gave a 90-minute speech at the convention. It was a 45-minute speech on the teleprompter and then 45 minutes of just going negative impromptu.
Yeah. I think she does have that opportunity. It's just, it's a real challenge. And it's not a knock against her. I think she's very capable. But and the Trump campaign will overplay its hand like they always do. So, you know, we just have to kind of see how this plays out. I don't think anybody should feel right now like, you know, one side or the other is going to emerge as the victor.
Yeah.
You, well, one point to be made is if Kamala were against the odds, I think at this point to lose this election, she would be unlikely to have her followers try to overthrow the government by storming the Capitol. Whereas that probably is the predicted method of Trump if he happens to lose. So I think wide margins are the key. If we can get everybody out and there's wide margins, that'll dissipate that tendency for civil unrest and rioting. That's to be avoided. And the fact that, again, we're normalizing this conversation where one candidate storms the Capitol and tries to overthrow the government and the other one is a legitimate candidate, law abiding and a prosecutor. I think that's going to tell the tale here.
Okay. One quick caller, William from Belvedere on line two. William, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. And thank you very much.
Make it quick, buddy.
Yes. One thing that troubles me, and I'd appreciate the guest's comments, this huge amount of money on both sides, $1 billion probably for this election. It is hard for me to imagine that anyone with that kind of money to give really wants meaningful economic change that would have a detrimental effect on their huge incomes. And I'd appreciate the guest's perspectives.
Anybody and everybody.
It's a great question. You know, I was looking up Jeff Bezos's net worth is $200.8 billion. And I thought, you know, he could give $1 million to everybody in America and we'd still have $200.6 billion, which may explain why some of these guys don't want somebody other than Trump elected, because they want to protect their wealth and the power that comes with it and the freedom they have that comes with it. So that is one of the issues, is how do you tell people it's time for them to do their fair share when they have the ability to say, no, that's not what America is about. You know, and it all gets manifested in fear. America has a really interesting history of fear as a mainstream political issue.
Yeah, it seems like the two national goals that we're really achieving are, A, putting more people in prison and making billionaires richer. I mean, we're really good at that.
Well said.
But not good at much of anything else. Okay, we have about 7 minutes. I'm going to let you guys go for about a minute each and give us the message that you want the people in the Bay Area to hear about this political process. Brent, can I start with you?
Sure. And I appreciate it. And thanks to all the panelists and the callers and the station folks for putting the show on. It's always a great experience to listen or participate. I just wanted to say quickly, I think it's up to us in the Bay Area to lead the country. They like to poke fun at San Francisco. I think the Bay Area is positioned to lead for Kamala right now. Silicon Valley has been a little deficient, obviously. We saw them get together and there is some support for Trump. I think they're going to look back at that moment shamefully. And my prediction is that Kamala will continue to educate regarding her platform and that the women will rally and the people will rally and we'll see better days in the United States very soon. And thanks again for including me on this panel.
Thanks, Brent. John, you've got about 45 seconds.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Dean and Jeff. I would just say this. I think the one of our callers talked about the issue of a first woman president. I think that's huge. And I would just say this, the campaign technology has changed where it doesn't matter if we're in California and California is going to go for the vice president. You have the opportunity with phones and with other technology to reach out to swing states and be a part of that campaign. So take a look at that if you're interested in the stakes here, which I think are very high.
Swing left, yes.
Bob.
Well, I think the other thing, you know, I've kind of discounted California in the presidential race. The reality is we've got a lot of very competitive congressional races here. And so they may very well decide who controls Congress. And I think all of us would agree if for some reason Trump were to win, we sure hope that the Senate and the Congress goes Democratic. So for political junkies, this is the kind of campaign that they love to watch. We're going to see what happens. And I think people should stay engaged and watch and try to learn and listen as much as they can.
Mark, close us out. Give us a preview of tomorrow's article if you want.
Well, this is more than just a political moment for the vice president. It's an opportunity to recast the political landscape. We have been mired in a certain kind of politics for about 9 years now, almost an unceasing and bitter gloom that has weighed us down. She has the opportunity to say, we're going to do something different, lift us up, bring a new affirmative optimism. Reagan was famous for his optimism. So was Clinton. So was Obama with hope and change. It's a message I think not only resonates with people, but I think this is a real opportunity for that message to really connect with people on a real basic level and sort of rise above the political mire and provide a dynamic vision for a better America that speaks to who we are at our best rather than American carnage and what's wrong with us.
Well, I've got a couple of seconds. I'll just say the words that occur to me are dystopia and utopia. Sometimes I feel like I'm watching a prequel to The Handmaid's Tale, and I hope that doesn't play out. And I also feel like we have the opportunity to turn America, you know, if we want to, if our politicians stop being underachievers and start inspiring us to be overachievers, we could turn America into that shining city on the hill that it was always meant to be.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be with everybody. This has been fun to do.
It's been a great discussion, fellas. We hope to have you back again soon. And thanks to all our listeners, and thanks to all of those folks who called in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And you've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've been discussing the presidential election and the presidential campaign. Our guests have been John Flaherty, once Chief of Staff to Transportation Secretary Norm Mineta, political activist Brent Turner, political writer Mark Simon, and Bob Marks, who is a former political consultant. Tonight's show was produced by Jeff Hayden and by yours truly. Please join us for Your Legal Rights again next week at Wednesday at 6 p.m. when we wrap up our discussion of the United States Supreme Court this term. And as always, we're looking for your view on this. We are ready to take your calls and answer your questions. Big thanks to tonight's guest and to all of you for listening, and to Joanne Marr Marla at the controls tonight. I'm Dean Johnson.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.